Welcome to another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. Our mission is to bring you discussions on a wide array of topics in the coaching world to grow players on and off the court. You can connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, and also reach us directly through email at basketballteacherpodcast@gmail.com. Now, here's your host, Coach Mike Hernandez.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you guys so much for joining us here for another episode. Wherever in the world you're listening to us from, whatever platform you're listening to us on, thank you guys so much for choosing to listen to this episode and really looking forward to sharing this with you. As I talked with my guest off air, this is one of those areas that I don't have a lot of experience in, and I know a lot of you listening we're really interested in topics similar to this. And what we're going to talk about today is focusing on developing high-level players, specifically not just from a coaching standpoint, but also just from a player development standpoint and working with players on an individual level and working with players who have aspirations, whether it's to play at a high university level or even professional aspirations of some sort, and what those players in particular need in order to be ready to play at that level, and also how to look at what sort of habits those players have in common, because maybe you as a coach listening have players who have the skill level and maybe have the ability level to play at that high level, but we also want to talk about what work ethic needs to happen, what training habits need to happen, and what separates players who are maybe good players from ones who are really great and have the ability to play at a high level. So this is one that should be really fun to get into. I'm very happy to be joined today by not only a coach, but somebody who does work with scouting as well as player development, which we'll really focus on today. My guest today is Coach Christian Narciso. Coach, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm really great, Mike. Thank you for having me here.
Yes, I'm really, really looking forward to hearing about the work you do. Coach, I know you have a lot of different positions that you do and a lot of things you do with basketball. So can you explain and talk to us about your basketball journey and your coaching journey and where have you been and what is it that you're currently doing right now?
Okay, Mike, thank you so much. So I will start from telling that I'm a professional basketball coach mainly. And I'm a PE, I have a PE bachelor, so I started coaching after playing, like probably all of us. I was 19 years old, and then I was kind of helping out with some kids, and then I got in a couple of years back to coach in a high-level environment. I was lucky, I have to be honest, because I was still focused about playing. And then in that period, I got with the under 17 girls team with a great club, which is DK Napoli Basket in my hometown in Naples, South Italy. And there from starting from kids, I told you, then I realized I was there, and then we got to the national finals. So I was there as an assistant coach, helping out another great coach that came from Denmark. And there I started my career. So right now, after being a professional basketball coach, I'm also a scout. I'm an international scout for some agencies and also for some clubs. And then I'm doing my player development program. I started online actually with this COVID time 2 years ago. And now I'm doing it also live session. So I'm mainly a pro basketball coach. Hired by a club. Here is a little bit different. It's not about schools, but it's just about clubs that are hiring you. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what I do. So I started, as I told you, in Naples. Then I was lucky to be as an assistant coach in a top division in Italy with the women's basketball. And afterwards, I got my experience as a head coach in different youth sector, youth clubs, youth organization. And after moving in my region, mainly in Naples, I got the opportunity to move to Denmark in another state of in Europe, in North Europe. And there I started as a pro basketball coach. I was hired, and we got a Division III men's team, which was not very professionistic. But then in two seasons in a row, we built a culture there, and we moved up to Division II and Division I in 2 years. So it was a great success, and now it's a semi-professionistic level. Actually, now I'm following them up, and they're going to move up again.
Oh, wow.
So that's great to have been part of that. And then I was, again, as a youth pro basketball coach with Falcon in the Copenhagen area, which is the capital of Denmark. Mm-hmm. And then I came back with the COVID time. Now I'm here in Sardinia. It's an isle where there's a couple of teams in the top league in Italy, both with women and men's team. So I'm here as the main guy here, hired as a youth development coach. So I went really quick, as quick as I could.
No, that's a lot of stops, a lot of places, a lot of different positions and jobs. So you've seen a lot of different things basketball wise. You've been involved in a lot of different areas, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. Also, it's like you get to know different culture, and that is gonna change you completely. Actually, I will dive in into this aspect, because I think I changed totally my way of coaching since I started to now. So it's great. It's a blessing, because I'm lucky to do as a job something that I really love and I put myself into every day.
Yeah, that's really nice. And I know that one of the areas that you've worked in is you've worked as a scout, and you've done scouting before. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that before we talk about your work as with player development. So what goes into your work as a scout, and what are some things that make a player stand out to you, or what gets a player, what gets their attention to you right away when you're doing scouting?
Well, actually, I will start again to talk about the difference between how I used to do, which was the beginning of my career, 12 years ago now, and I was scouting mainly, you know, the other teams, their sets, and you know, about the players' development was more about, okay, we know that we have to find a solution against this player and this other player. Sure. Then with time, obviously, I started to do it on my own. And when I have to be honest, something that really always caught up my attention was the ability to read the game. So actually, it's something that I don't know if it can be mentioned in talent, but I think when a player is smart enough to make the right reads in the game, that's what is standing out. And probably we see it as a talent, you know? I see it more as, okay, he has been trained to make decisions, to take initiative, and to be able to maintain and concretize the advantages taking. And then another thing, it's very important also as my background as a professional coach, is the hustle. He has to be an hustle player. He has to have a character. He has to be there all the time and not hiding in a corner. So these are the two things that stand out in my scouting process about players. And all when I was helping some agencies here in Italy, actually also in Germany, to find out players that could be good for certain types of top leagues, like in Denmark or in Italy. So yeah, I would say these two criteria, decision-making skills and hustling and character, are the most important, the one that stands out.
Yeah, and I like that, because if you're scouting or you're looking at film on a player, and you look at a lot of film on a player, you can really tell right away, right, if they're hustling and if they're giving all of the effort that they possibly can, because you notice kind of like everything that they're doing. So you notice if they're giving their full effort and they're working as hard as they possibly can be, right?
Yeah, that's true. Also, when you scout someone overseas, so many times you get a lot of tapes, you know, of players that they want a contract, they want a first experience abroad, And the point is, like, mostly they're focused on their offensive skills. And yeah, that's good because, you know, many teams, they probably need someone that is scoring. I'm not going to lie to you. But then if it's a top level league, well, you don't need only to score, but you need to be a full prepared player, you know, and you have to have a brain and make decisions. That is is the difference between having a contract wherever in which level or in a top level league.
Yeah, sure. So I know that you have done and do a lot of work developing players who want to be playing at a high level, or they have those dreams or desires to play at that level. So just to start, what is some of the training that you like to do with the players that you work with? I'm sure that you do different things depending on the player and depending on their skill set, but what are some general things that you like to do or really like to have your players do when you are working with them?
Well, first of all, if we talk about high level youth of players that probably they're going to go to the next level or they want to go to that next level, it's important to create a connection. First of all, before any drill, because then you understand from the character how where you can get with him, you know. And for example, in Denmark, when I had this opportunity to coach some American really good players, with them I had to start with a connection and understanding how hard they were willing to work. And then I started, you know, to build them some routine. We were going at 6 a.m. in the morning to practice, and because we had the court free at that time, so we're waking up really early and putting some shots up. And it's important at the beginning to give them some routine. Okay, we do this type of drills, and it's mostly on the shooting part. I'm really focused on that because most of the players they need that part to get first, because it's like, okay, also, if you're not ready to do many other things or read the game, at least when you got the opportunity to shoot, you're going to get ready for that. So to be honest, I start with that. And then, of course, I changed a lot by time, you know, my approach on individual coaching. After creating connection, it's important also to receive honest feedback. One with another. So we have to understand what they think. You have to understand what they think they want get better at versus what I see. You know, it's like, okay, yeah. I want to understand what's your perspective. I understand your perspective, and then I tell you what I see. And then like that, it's you create a connection that is lasting. It's like, this guy is gonna do that not only for you as a coach, but he's doing for himself and understanding, okay, all right, I have to work on these abilities. And another aspect, as also, you know, I'm a sports scientist, so widen the mobility skills, it's very important for me. So basically, I'm in each exercise, each drill I'm putting, I always put a focus on the mobility skills, you know, exploring different new skills. For example, if he's a big man, I'm making him do things as a guard, which is catching their attention. You know, it's also, let's say, more fun. And that's
a little different.
yeah, it's conquering them, because at the beginning, it's like, okay, this guy knows that I can be a guard. Most of the big men, the imports in Europe and overseas, mostly they have this mind, like, no, I'm a guard. You're a 7-foot player and you're a guard. All right, okay, yeah. I'll go with that. I'll go with that and I'll make sure. You work on that. Yeah, but it's important because they understand you get them, you know, and then from them you say, okay, all right, we have been working on this, but now we have to work on your limits, because if you can be dominating in the paint, for example, I made the example of the 7-foot player, then you can explore different skills. But if you're not dominating on that side, if you don't work on those skills that are your limits, you're never gonna go to the next level. So I think, you know, you have to make a gradual step, first to go close to the player, and then to bring him with you. You know, it's like, okay, now come to my side, you know, come to my side. And then it's like also how I develop workouts. Now my approach has changed completely. So before it was more of a, you know, I told you like shooting. And then it was a solo. It was like, okay, I was passing the ball and it was shooting. And now I totally changed my approach on that.
Do you, you mentioned that you like to have your players tell you like what they think and what they see, and then you tell them what it is that, that you see in their game and in their skill set. Do you find that players know themselves well? Can they give you like an honest and have an honest discussion about where they're at? Or do you find sometimes that there's like a lot of difference in what they see and then like what you see?
Well, it depends also on the age of the players and their experiences. But yeah, mostly I would say they're not really aware because they focus a lot on the on what they would like, how they would like to play, you know. For example, in Denmark first year, I got a 7-foot player. It was a great shooter. Okay, it was like his best skill was shooting, you know. But then I was trying to get him to understand. It's like, okay, that's great. We have a team full of shooters. And yeah, you're the best shooter probably, but you're also 7 foot and you can free the space to your teammates. So I had to bring him on the next level on understanding that, yeah, it's great. You will put up your numbers. You will take your shots. But it's also important that you take the paint, because if you can do that and you're really good at, because he was, you can give some more space for your teammates to score. And that is going to bring you, you know, to win championship. That what happened the first year I was in Denmark. So I think it's important to be honest with your player. And sometimes, you know, that's why I was telling you about, you know, widen their mobility skills and exploring different new skills. Because it's like, okay, this guy is used to play as a big man, but he wants to shoot. Okay, let's try to make him do some playmaking or some, you know, different stuff. And then you bring him to your side and he's understand that you want to work on him on 360 degrees. And then on that, you buy them. It's like, okay, I know that I have to work on my limits. So they will start to understand, okay, he gets me, so I will work for him. I will work. And then they probably don't understand that they're working for themselves. They're getting better in what is their limitations. And for example, with this player, I've seen after many years that he has been going all around the world. And then he has been doing great, you know, also on his post moves that he didn't like to do, but he was a 7-foot player. So,
and well, if you're working with players who want to play at a real high level or need to play at a real high level, I feel like it has to be really important that they have skills in all different areas, because, and you can speak to this, as the competition level increases and as it gets more and more competitive and more serious, I'm sure the players are very skilled in so many different areas. So it seems really important, like you said, that those individual players have to spend time on their limitations. Otherwise they won't be ready, and they're going to probably not be that effective if they are playing at a higher professional level.
Yeah, that's all the difference that he's making. They can continue. If you have a scorer above all, it's like, okay, you're going to score all in leagues that probably are not where you want to be. So it's like, okay, that's cool. But if you develop what is your limitation or what you're not good at, well, that is opening for you other doors. So that is something that is really important, both on young players that they want to play professionally, and both on players that, you know, they want a career, for example, overseas.
And in because you've been to many different places, this thought came to my head that you probably know what areas are more serious or more competitive and have like a higher level skill of basketball play going on, versus maybe other areas that maybe just don't have as serious of competition or as high level of basketball. And so you probably are aware of that too, when you work with players and kind of know where their background is and where they came from, what sort of level of basketball that they're used to. Am I kind of right in thinking that?
Yeah, that's true actually, because I've been facing that, you know, when you have, for example, you have a zone of certain country where there is no basketball culture, okay? And then when you know that, probably most of the players, they're not even that serious about that, or they think, or who is serious is thinking about moving out and going to other cities or to other areas where, you know, basketball is more developed and they could have a chance as basketball players. But it's also about building a culture, you know, like I was saying, if you build a culture and then you're having a good team because you're winning 2 years in a row, and then you have a semi-pro environment, then it's easier because, you know, other players are coming to you to play, and then it's like, okay, here I have a chance to get better. And probably that is making the difference between some young guys that they want to be professional, some young guys that they start to, it's like, okay, I'm playing basketball, but, you know, it's not that, it's not the reason of my life. I need to do other stuff first. So,
And when some, I'm thinking like some players, maybe not just with you, but in general, once they realize how high level like basketball can be or how much skill is involved, maybe for some of them, they may realize, oh, maybe this isn't for me, or maybe like, I didn't realize it was this serious, or like, I didn't realize like it was, I had to, you know, put this much effort in, and maybe some of them, it isn't for them. And maybe some of them are like, oh, this is what I want. I want to be pushed. I want to be challenged. And I really want to develop to get to that level. I'm sure it maybe just is different depending on the player.
Yeah, of course. And then it's also cultural, you know, in some countries, for example, I put you the example of Denmark, when you were putting pressure on them because they understood at some point, okay, this is serious. And then many were quitting, I have to be honest.
Yeah.
But some other, they were really taking, you know, important steps forward. And then, for example, I got, of course, the percentage is, you can imagine how it is, you know, the quitting one are way higher than the one that they continue to work on themselves. But then you see them developing really. And then, like, I have a couple of players that I put in the senior team when they were 14 in Denmark. And now these two guys are in the best academy in Denmark, which, yeah, it's the highest level there for young players. But then, you know, he's thinking about to go to college. So it's like, it's great because you see that you're pushing someone then to give the best of what they could, you know? So they work on their limits. They're doing it also when you don't tell them to do, they do it by themselves. And that's, I think, you know, the beauty of our job of, you know, instilling this passion in them.
Yeah. And that's something that I'm sure like you're well aware of is, you know, because of your experience, what, you know, basketball at a high level works at. So you, I'm sure, feel that level of responsibility to make sure that the work that you do and the training that you do with them is getting them ready for where they are going to go if they're going to take it seriously. And if it doesn't end up being for them and they end up quitting, then it's a good thing that you push them really hard so that they're able to like see like this is what it's going to be like, and if it's not for you, that's okay. But you kind of owe it as a coach, you need to make sure that as a trainer that you kind of show them this is what it is going to look like, and that sounds like what you do with the training and the work that you do.
Yeah, absolutely, you're right. And it's about honesty, you know. It's like, okay, you know, you cannot stay with one shoe in. It's like, okay, you're all in or you're all out. It's fine. You can do something else in your life. It's not about everyone has to play basketball. But when you're serious about that, I think that is pushing you, and then it's becoming a big motivation to get better daily.
Sure. What do you believe that all players should know if they're serious about playing basketball at either a college or a professional level? What do you think they should know? And I know we talked about this a little bit, but what do you think they should know so that not only the players know, but even us as coaches can tell players that they need to know if they're really serious about wanting to play at some sort of a college or professional level?
Well, I believe that about being serious to play a professional level, they need accountability. It's important to be there, to always show up on time, to be precise. This is something like it's a non-negotiable, you know? It's like, okay, you want to be that serious about that? You know that you have to be accountable, like you have to be taken accountable. Second thing, it's absolutely consistency. You cannot work like 5 days and then the sixth days you're resting. It's just like work every day. And something that I'm really pushing my players to do right now, also in the last few years, is to work smart. Sometimes as a trainer, we are so caught up about working hard, you know, that's yeah. Great. That's absolutely great. But you have also to work smart and you have to have a purpose when you go to practice, because sometimes many players, when they're on their own working, they kind of, you know, they're just putting shots up and they are not really working on what they need. So it's important also they understand. That's why also this initial state, you know, like, okay, let's create a connection, because you have to understand that if you want to be serious about that and you want to work every day to make your dream come true, because that's about it, you gotta be smart. You gotta go there, out there, to practice every day consistently, but in a smart way. And for that, I can also add, you know, like in the last few years, to develop high level players, I'm using way more game approach, for example. Individual work sometimes is becoming a work with 3-4 players, because I'm always putting a defender. And if there is no defender and there is only the individual training, I'm trying to be the defender, or I'm trying always to put a situation that are game like, you know?
I think that's really good, because I know a lot of coaches, you know, especially here in the States, one of the things that they are worried about sometimes is that the trainers that some of our players have, they're so individual that they don't necessarily use those skills in a game because they're not realistic or they don't apply to a game. So I feel like it's really important that, as you mentioned, that players, they're working on things that are game-like, or they're working in game-like situations, so that they're always kind of thinking about, you know, how does this apply in a game, or how can I use this skill in a game situation?
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. And also it's a little bit of modern basketball, you know. It's like, okay, we have been coaching like this for many years because we learned from other coaches, you know, the one that were coaching us. So sure, we're kind of doing the same thing without asking ourselves if that is going to transfer to the game, because that's the most important. I can make a queue of layups and one line is going to lay up and the other one is going to rebound, but what is this giving me as a as a transfer, you know? So sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm doing this, but why am I doing this? It's like, what is gonna give them? And that's what I'm thinking. It's a lot of work, I have to be honest. It's not easy to be a trainer like that, you know. It's easy to say, okay, put up 100 shots and that's it, you know. And then on the other hand, you have to understand that shot has to be as realistic as possible to a game-like situation. So that's why I'm using CLA, you know, like a constraint-led approach. And it's important that the players have this ability to self-organize. So that's why sometimes I'm working with three players, and then I'm working with one defender and two offensive players, attacking and kicking out the ball, for example, to put up shots. So I'm putting up a shooting exercise drill, just like that, not just taking the ball and shooting, but I have to have always someone that is coming to close out, because that's what most likely is going to happen in a game. So I changed a lot, you know, during the years, my approach on player development. So I think it's very important to be honest with them, as we said before, and then to understand, okay, I want you to get better, but in order to get better, you need to have a realistic situation of practice. So many players, they have this idea, no, that this is just practice. Then in the game, I will do differently. Well, if you don't practice to do something constantly, you know, we were talking about habits before, it's hard that you're going to transfer what you have in your mind in the game.
Yeah, and it's I feel like one of the real benefits if you are trying to train your players that way, it sounds like, you know, you're thinking like a coach, and you're almost thinking like, okay, what if this was a game, what would be happening, or what would another coach be doing to try and like stop that like player that you're working with? And you almost, while you're training your player, you're almost thinking like a coach is sometimes, like if this was a game situation, here's what, you know, a team would do to you, or here's what you would need to do as a player if you were in that situation. And it sounds like you kind of put them in those environments where, you know, you're telling them like, this is what you're going to see in a game, or this could be a situation you would face in a game. And so let's work on these skills, because these are the things then that you're probably going to see once you end up like in an actual game situation.
Absolutely, Mike. I totally agree with you. And I think it's also, if you we think about it, it's also kind of easy, because imagine that being a coach on the bench, you're thinking about how to make your best opponent to not score, you know? So yeah, you're thinking about that. And then if you do it with your player, you're just helping him, because it's like, okay, I will put this constraint on you. I will try to block you to not make you score.
Yeah.
And then you got to find a solution with that. That the solution doesn't have to be prescribed as we like always to have this control, you know, and say, okay, you've got to do this and this. But it's more important to find out first what they could do, which solution they can find, and then to discuss about it. It's like, okay, what do you think is was better, to have a fadeaway in that situation, or it was more efficient to do another thing? So I think, you know, that's important in the relationship we have with the players, and also in the daily routine they're making, to have always some kind of stop that they have to find the solution, you know?
And like, it sounds like you like to have a lot of conversations with your players, right, about the things that they see or why they made certain decisions. It sounds like as you're training, there's a lot of conversation where you like to hear what they have to think and what they are seeing on the court.
I'd say it's off the training. Like when we are on the court, I like the feedback, but it has to be as flying as possible. I don't like to stop him and say, okay, we're doing this, because I know I've been a player. when you're playing and then the coach is stopping you every 3 seconds, it's like, oh man, damn, I was getting my shut up. So I know I talk with my players, but in the time before and after, you know, it's important that when they are practicing, they know, you know, that they have to focus really on what they're doing and how to find solution, because they have already a lot of cognitive load, you know, that they have to figure out solutions. So it's like, if you stay there and tell them what to do or what not to do, I think it's not the right message to give them. We want to transfer to the game and then we're stopping the game every time. It's not really realistic, let's say.
Right. But they do know that, like, you are going to, when you're done, you'll have that conversation. So it's like, you can do a lot of work and do all the work and not interrupt them. And they know if they have thoughts or they have questions or things that they're thinking about, they're going to have that time to like have that conversation with you. So that's good that they know that, like, they can talk to you or have that conversation, even if it's afterwards.
Yeah, I believe, you know, connection with your players is the most important thing. Is also what is getting us moving, you know. It's like, okay, we want the best for these players. That's our responsibility, that's our satisfaction at the end, you know. So Bavolo on player development, and this guy are choosing you to be their coach. It's like, okay, man, I'm gonna provide you with the best tools I can give you. And talking back about what I believe it's serious, you know, about playing professional level for young players. I've been talking about accountability and consistency. And another important thing is being coachable. So that all this discourse I was telling you is also about, okay, are you willing to do that? So be comfortable with getting critics to get better, getting comfortable with your coach telling you things. And sometimes the things you're listening to are not that nice. And, you know, it's important because many times when you want to go to a professional level, you have to get what you get with the from the coach. So you cannot just, you know, do what you want. And that's
that sounds really important, you know, the being coachable part, especially for players at a high level, because they might be used to being really successful and they might be used to things like going really well for them. And they might not be used to being told what they're doing wrong or mistakes they're making. So I'm sure for some of them, it could be really frustrating for them to make mistakes or to not be doing well when they're maybe in some cases really used to doing really well all the time. So if they're able to handle that in a positive way and be coachable, like you said, that probably speaks a lot to their maturity to be able to handle that, especially, like I said, because a lot of them maybe are used to have been successful when they were like younger growing up.
Yeah, that's true. Also, they have to face the reality. many times, look, it's also about overseas players, you know, like Americans that they come to Europe because they want to play overseas. And they've been so successful in their program where they were playing and scoring a lot. And then they find a situation where you have a lot of pressure and in three games, you don't do what you were supposed to do, you cut. So you have to be honest with them. It's like, okay, you know, like in the top league in Italy here, I think they changed all the teams that have changed at least three Americans average during the year. So you can imagine how hard it is to remain in the same job, you know, because it's a job for them and you have to do your job at your best. And if you're not coachable, that's, you know, sometimes you can be also the best player in the team. But in some environments, in some top leagues, you cannot be coachable, you know?
Yeah. You it's right. Like you said, especially if you have players who are coming from the States and they come to play overseas, you know, that's that they some of them, like you said, they don't have a lot of time to figure things out, right? They gotta make sure that they're learning and picking things up right away. Otherwise, like you said, it might be very short career for them.
Yeah, that's true. Also, because the point is like you're going back, you're going to other clubs. Luckily, depends also on your character. Because if you're not being coachable, well, you have to be really a good player to stay in the business. Otherwise, mostly you have to come back home, and that's not what we are working for. We want players to succeed. We want our not only clients, I would say our, you know, we're seeing them growing up with us. So it's like we want them to succeed, and that's, you have to be honest with them. You cannot say, okay, you will go great, don't worry. It's like, no, man, you know, you should know these, and these. And if you practice like this, you're accountable, you are consistent, you're coachable, that job is going to be easier. It's going to be easier for you because you know what to do on a basketball court.
Yeah.
And above all, out of the basketball court.
Yeah, sure. since you've worked with many players and you've seen a lot of different things, and when it comes to the way players work or what you see players do on the court, what is the difference between a good player versus one who you would say is like a great player? What sort of separates those two in your mind?
That's a very interesting question. Actually, I think, what separates a good from great players, I'd say, as I anticipated before, having a routine. It's like, if you don't have a routine of your own practice, even I would say I see basketball now as a more on a holistic approach. Okay, you have to have a routine even in your life. And so many times you see players that are just, I don't know, waking up late or not skipping breakfast or like not eating well. And when you have a routine, it's like it's giving you also the purpose, okay, I'm doing this thing because I need to get better and I want to be in this position and I want to work for what I deserve. Also because it's a job. So I would say that you can see between the good and the great, that the great one have a routine, about his lifestyle in general, but above all about his practice. Then training with a purpose, as I said before, I believe that when you go to the gym and you know what you're doing, you have a program, or you make your coach make a program, your personal trainer make a program, it's different. It's making all the difference in the world than, okay, I'm just hitting the gym and then I'm doing some, I don't know, total body, or I'm doing some arms. It's like, okay, you know why you're working on that? And that's important. And also, as a last, I would say training smart more than hard. Not because we don't want them to work hard, because that's important, that we cannot skip from it. But if they're not smart in what they're doing, they don't do it again as a, with a purpose and trying to get the best out of it, trying to work on their limits, trying to get better on what they're not good at. Well, that's a waste of time.
Yeah, and I think that they're, I think for some players, they might think that, you know, to play at a real high level, they have to, you know, they have to work really hard. And maybe in some cases they work almost like too hard. And like you said, they're not working smart, or they're almost doing too much to where they might be, you know, hurting themselves or injuring themselves or not giving them time, you know, proper time to recover and rest. And that, like you said, there has to be like a part where like you work smart and you know, one, like what to do in order to get better and not just do stuff that won't help you, but two, make sure that you're not trying to do like too much or try to get too better too quickly that you end up kind of like hurting yourself or doing something like that.
I totally agree with you, Mike. I totally agree with you, because many players think, okay, I have to do more. I have to go over pain. It's like, hey, man, if you have pain, I don't think you should go over it, because it's not smart. Mm-hmm. So it's about also about being aware, you know, of yourself, being conscious. And that's not something easy. But there you can see the difference between a good player and a great player, because great players, they know how to deal with their lives in a moralistic way, and they can they have a routine, they train with a purpose, and they're training smart. That's the most important thing.
This is a question that sort of came to my mind right now as we're having our conversation, because you mentioned about how there are, you know, the players that you work with, they choose to work with you, and that's a big responsibility, and that's a lot on for you as well, because there are a lot of trainers that are out there, and there's a lot of people that will work with players. This is a question I just sort of thought of, but what do you think players should look for when they are looking for a trainer? Because and I'll let you speak to this, I'm sure there's so many out there that it could be maybe hard, you know, for a player to know what sort of trainer is right for them.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Also because many times, I have to be honest, players are choosing someone that is famous, if he's reachable also as a, you know, like he was training, I don't know, some NBA star, some high level player. You know, we're also living out of reviews. <We're> sure. Society in general that is going like that. So for a player, would be great to see the value that they can get from this trainer. Like if they believe that this trainer can help them out, not only in basketball, because that's a part of your life, you know, even if you're a professionist, even if you're a professional player, you know that most of your time you have to know also how to spend it. So it's important that when you choose a trainer, you have to understand the person, you have to see that this person gets you also on the character side. I know that this is not something that players are looking for, because they're like, I know I just need to get better on shooting, so I will go to this specialist of shooting, and that's it, you know? That is probably what they're gonna look for. But what I advise the player, I would advise a player to do is like to understand which person are you working with. And this person is really having time to take care of you, because I can also go to the best trainer that he has, I don't know, 10 NBA players, and then he has you, and you're paying a lot of money for that. And then it's
yeah,
probably
you're true.
Yeah, he cannot put you in the same group with them, but then you're spending money. And then are you sure that he's going to take care of you as much as he would take care of someone else? So it's all things. Actually, this can be expanded even with the agency, you know, and the agents. And but this is another story that you don't want to know. And so, yeah, I believe that a potential client, like a player that wants to get serious about his game and get better, he should consider all these things.
Well, you bring up a point of that, you know, to have a trainer that like you said, that some of them might want to go to somebody who's like more famous or well known, but then you said, if you go to somebody who's like really famous or really well known, like how busy is that person? Yeah. How much time do they really have for you? And so, like you said, that may not be the best fit, because, you know, if you're not at the level that all these other players are, like you said, like how much attention are you going to get? And you're just going to be spending a lot of money and maybe not getting much out of it.
Yeah, true. Absolutely.
Yeah. What, so for a lot of the coaches, I'm not sure overseas, but I know sometimes we have this here in the States, is we have teams that we coach, like school teams that we coach, that maybe have a real highly skilled or high level player, but the rest of the team that we have isn't as skilled. And so we want to make sure that we're helping that player develop and giving them chances to succeed, even if their teammates aren't at that same level or maybe don't have those same goals. So I'm curious if you have any ideas or any advice of what maybe coaches can do if they have maybe one or two players on their team that are really highly skilled and maybe the rest of them aren't, like how we can work with those players and make sure that they're still getting what they need, even if their teammates maybe won't be able to help them as much.
Well, I understand you, Mike. I think we're all have been there. And I have to be honest, even this year I got a team that looks like that. So I know a little bit how, at least I can give my perspective on that.
Sure.
Because we had an under 15 team, which was a little bit made of guys that were 1 year younger. And then the few guys that were 1 year older, they were really good. Mm-hmm. Actually, there was one that was really good, and all the rest, mostly the level was way lower. So I understand a little bit your question. And to be honest and clear about that, I am being clear with my player about the roles. It's like, okay, we all know who is the guy here that is taking most of the shot, because and then which role we have on the team. I know that sometimes to do that with the young players, you have to be also really nice to explain that. You cannot just say, okay, you're not good at it, you stay in the corner. No. It's really important to understand that most of the responsibility is on the good player. And the good player has this responsibility to make everyone be better at the end of that year, for example, that season. And you have to also be sure to humble the good player, giving him responsibility as a leader. So it's like, okay, I have this good player, or the idea would be, okay, everyone in the corner and he's playing one against five against everyone. like that, you're not going to get anything out of the player, because he's not getting better. If he plays like that, I don't know how many games in high school or in lower age are they playing during the season, but here there are a lot, and if you make them play like that, for sure you risk injuries, you risk that the other one, when there is not on the court the best one, they're not doing anything, they don't have this confidence to try.
Sure.
So it's important to give responsibility and leadership to the player. He can help out the other players. You know, he has to make his teammate better, making them try and fail. It's important. It's really key that all the others, they have to have a space to try. They have the space to try to drive to the basket, to kick out the ball. Sometimes I was giving some constraint, you know, using always the CLA. I was also making some games where the best player had the restriction. And for example, I don't know, I was using tasks to give him, you know. So he had to solve some problem. Okay, so for example, in the task, I would make a situation for a. He has to make a situation for a teammate to score. So he doesn't have to score, but their opponent they didn't know, so they're guarding him like he's going to score. But then his goal is to make, for example, three assists.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Or it can be more of a personal goal. It's like, okay, I know that you're really great at driving and going with the right hand because you're right-handed. So even in the game, sometimes I'm putting rules like, okay, you have three lefty layups to make in a quarter. Good luck with that. Otherwise, you're sitting on the bench. And then you risk also to lose games. It's fine. But you know that is going to help your best player to understand how to find a solution with a restriction like that. And for example, as a constraint, in practice, he's allowed to score only with a given goal, for example. Or if he's good with a three-point line, he's good as a shooter, he has to try more to attack inside. So you give him some limits or you give him some little restriction. And then another thing that I'm doing, another suggestion, is like to coach against him. You know, it's like, okay, let's make some teamwork problem to solve for him. So we set up a double team every time the guy's touching the ball. So he's forced to move the ball and gonna receive it in a situation where he can score or he can be useful for his teammates. So these are all little constraints that I use to help above all the others. Because you see that when you're constraining in a good way, your best player is learning new skills. And then the others are taken in account by the coach. It's like, okay, I can take the shot. I can dribble. I can try my thing. And then, of course, there will be frustration. There will be some moments that the best player is getting a bit tired of this situation. And the first thing I always say is like, okay, he's in my team, but he has to go and play also with someone that is older, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for example, this guy on the under 15, we put him to play with the senior. To play with the under 19. So there he had to find different solution. And then when he was with under 15, he had the leadership to help his teammate to get better. So I think that's really key. That's two, three advices that I can give to coaches like me that are finding this situation. And that helped us a lot also to gain more confidence. And actually I was so happy that one of the last games of the year we played the game without our best player, and we won a game like against a team that was supposed to be way better than us. But then all the other, they got so much confidence that they started to attack the rim, and actually I got everyone scoring. So that is what we're we're looking up to. We want this kind of situation. We want everyone to get better, not only the good one. And the good one got better because he's training also with the older one. So I think it's a win-win situation for everyone.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I like the idea of putting those restraints on your best player because, like you said, that's what other coaches are probably going to do to that player. So if you put that limit on a player and say like, hey, you only have to do this, even though it's more challenging for you, while in a game, coaches are probably going to try and really challenge that player if they know that they're the best one. So to have to work on those skills or have those limitations, that they might have those limitations put on them in an actual game situation, especially if they're definitely the best player, they're going to be the one that the other coaches are going to try and take away and make frustrated.
Yeah, that's true. And also it's important, I believe, to that's why I'm so much into the connection with the player, because it's like, if you do that without telling your best player or without telling the others, That is going to make a lot of friction between the teammates. And then instead, you have to be really honest about these matters, also because they're growing up, they understand also that the democracy of basketball is limited, you know. Like, you know,
sure,
you know also when most of our players in a youth program, probably two are going to play to the next level if you're a good club. If you're not a club that is recruiting and having all the best of the area, okay. If you're a normal club, a normal organization, is working like that. So you have to be honest with your players. You have to connect with them. You have to make them also find out solution by themselves.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's so fun when I'm putting them to have timeouts and design games, you know? So it's like, okay, we make a game against these two others. What are our goals? What do we need? And then they're making their timeouts. And sometimes also you raise someone that has leadership skills and you didn't know until that moment because you always talk over them. You know, you were coaching and then they were listening. And then now you're giving them the chance also to lead or to follow. So it's important because you see so many things going on in the locker room, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like how they relate with each other, and that's how you grow players.
Before I ask my final couple questions, this is something I was curious about, especially because you work with really young players, and here in the States, I know that it's a big problem of younger players who try to shoot a lot of outside shots before they're physically ready to do that. And we really have to do a lot of work to make sure that they learn proper form and technique before they're shooting a lot of threes. Is that a problem that exists over there? Are there bad shooting habits that have to be fixed?
Well, yeah, of course. That's why I was telling you about the game approach. You know, sometimes I understand. Also here, there is a lot of teaching fundamentals like against zero and doing stuff like that. And the next step, I can make him shoot from further and then further and then further. I understand the progression. It's a good point, but I've seen that working in a different way, working with the games approach, making them decide, making them have decisions, that is making them more aware of what they're capable of. And they understand when it's time to take a three. For example, we got under 13 that they don't even have the 3-point line and they're shooting from three because at some point they understand when they can shoot and when they can't. But without that approach, without making them always to find problems, to find solution, and to make decision every time they're on the court, without giving them all this teaching skill, like, okay, we make layups against zero until we learn the layup. And then we make layup with the left hand. And then this approach is an approach that I've tried, you know, at the beginning of my career, also because I was following other coaches, you know. And I've seen that it's paying off more to give them the idea that they have to solve the problem. They don't have only to listen to what you say and repeat and repeat. We can make repetition without repetition. I take this this sentence from Alex Arama, Basketball Immersion. It's important to make repetition of a skill, but in a different scenarios, because the basketball is not giving us free layups without any opponent. It can happen two times in a game when you steal a ball and you're alone against the basket. So you have to be willing to put them in a real situation that can happen. I believe that could fix all the problem of, okay, when they can take a shot from outside, when they can take a shot from inside, but to make them try.
Yeah,
I'm against this thing. It's like, no, don't shoot from three. And I'm more about, okay, what's your feedback about that? You think you can shoot from there? You think, you know, this is going to help us win games? Or you think, no, I sometimes I make little discussion at the end of the practice where they talk. And I want to hear from them what they think or what's better. At the beginning they're really shy, but when they're getting to know each other and they know that this is a moment where they can open up freely, I think that is helping them to find new solution. And that's why, for example, I told you, under 14, 1 year after, now they're all shooting from three. And sometimes when I'm making shooting competition where they can choose where to shoot, some of them, they're shooting from the 4-point line, let's say. It's like, wow, these guys are really advanced. No, some of them are not really that good in basketball, but they found out a way how to shoot from further. And that's just because they developed first motor skills, because without them, we're talking about air. But all the rest, they're finding out by themselves and seeing what is convenient for them. That's what I believe as a trainer, I had to teach a young player to understand when it's the best time for him to do something, and if it's efficient for him, if it's gonna bring me advantages.
So, and well, because you being a coach and you having experience, and you know, as somebody who's coached games and been in a lot of situations, you can probably look at a player and know what they're going to be doing in a game, or what their role might be, or what situations they might find them on. It's one of those things where you have that experience and you have that knowledge, and you can probably work with a player and look at them and see where they would fit or what they would potentially be doing in a game, and kind of put them in those situations to really make sure that they're ready and they're prepared by, you know, putting them in all those different sort of scenarios.
Well, yes and no, I would say, because sometimes you don't know what is going to happen in the game. So sometimes I'm making totally I would say I randomize. Okay.
Yeah.
I would put some exercises where they start from random position or random situation, and then they experience different things all the time. And that, I think, is key, above all, when they're really young, when they're 11 years old, 12 years old, 13 years old.
Right. Because, when they're young, especially.
Yeah. For example, when we have under 13 games here, it's just going back and forth. You know, and then you see under 14 games where they stop and they play motion, you know, so it's like, wow, it's changing so much, and it's 1 year of difference. And then it's more about what you will find in the game, and then you have to adapt to that. And if you make them in practice, in situation that they can find on the court, they will adapt easily. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Like, especially when they're younger, because the younger the player, you don't know like how they're going to grow, or like physically, or what absolutely style they're going to be in. And probably in their younger, they're going to be playing for a lot of potentially different coaches and be used in a lot of different ways. So like you said, randomizing it for them is really helpful for them, because what they're doing when they're, you know, 10, 11 or 12 is probably going to be a lot different than as they, you know, get older.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's the most important thing, that they understand the game. You know, we have to make them understand the game, not only to listen to us and do what we say.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to happen in the game. They cannot turn around and see us, whatever we want them to do.
Yeah. Awesome. Coach, to finish up, there's a couple questions that I ask every guest. So I'm going to go ahead and start with this first one. Thinking back on your coaching career or your training career, is there a moment that you can think of that you experienced that others listening would be able to learn from?
Well, the first thing that is coming to my mind, I was in Bayern where I was coaching in Denmark these 2 years when we got two finals in a row and we moved up. And the second final, I was actually at the last quarter. I think it was second quarter. And then we were playing, the player was listening to me so much. They were playing really tough, but then they were really suffering because the other team was well prepared against us. And then I was really tough on them. And that we need to do this, we need to defend, we need to box out, we need to do all this stuff, you know? Yep. And then I got an advice from my GM, that he was a real experienced ex-coach. And then he came to me as like, look, all the players, they're pending from your lips. You know, they're doing whatever you're saying. And that is not working, and you're being tough on them. What about if you chill a little bit and, you know, make them play, make them be relaxed because you roll over them and they're doing everything they can at their max effort. But if you keep being tough with them, I don't know how can they relate with that. And actually that made me think, because at the beginning I was like, no, you don't understand. And I was like, also my ego was taking over. It's like, no, you don't understand. Then then I was like, okay, that was a changing moment, because it's like, I went to the locker room and I said, guys, you're playing really, really well. You're trying your best. I know you're doing that. Go out and have fun. This is basketball. Mm-hmm. And then actually when they feel more relieved, they went back fighting point by point until the last second, and we won the game. We won the final. So that made me change also a little bit my approach to be more open, but what to share. At the beginning, I was a little bit closing myself. You know, sometimes it's like, it's my drill, it's my practice, my game, it's my...
Yeah, it's all you.
and that is not helping. That is not helping you to grow as a person and who is around you to grow. And that's what you want. So that helped me to not close myself in my knowledge, to keep studying the game, you know, to do different stuff about basketball, to scout, to even play a game when I can. So it's all different perspective that can help you out. And sometimes we have also to understand that we are talking with human. We are not talking. That's why my approach is way more holistic right now. And I see more as the humankind, you know, the player, not only as a basketball player, but as a person. And that I think is key, because when they understand that you care about them as a person, they're willing to do everything in order to learn and also to reach their goals.
Yeah. And like you said, so important to that. They know that you care about them as a person and that you want their betterment. And you don't just look at them as a basketball player. No, that's really good.
That's true, because you build also relationship afterwards, you know, build relationship during the time together, and then you have memories. It's amazing. It's all part of the job, and it's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you there. To wrap up, Coach, I give every guest, I call it like a 60-second platform, but you can go longer. It's perfectly okay. It's for you to give out your kind of like a final message, kind of a final thought, or just some sort of final idea that you want to leave the listeners with, so you can kind of take it any direction you want. But I just kind of want to give you that platform and give you the space to kind of leave the listeners with a message of yours that you wanted to share. So I'm going to let you take it from here, and I'll let you go ahead and share what that is.
Thank you, Mike. So, well, I will start from the last thing we were saying, you know, about being open. I think it's part of my, has been part of my career. I started in one way, and then I'm still here. I'm still young as a coach, and I'm still learning. And I believe that more you're open, more you share things, more you look at the others, more you don't close yourself in your knowledge, more you learn. And that is something that has been going on with all my life. I changed my way of coaching since I was 20 till now. And something also that helped me a lot was unbelievably yoga, because I met also I met my wife, which is a yoga instructor. Actually, we're even building our program together, because many of the things I'm doing with the CLA and the game approach are kind of going together, intertwined with this with their yoga practice. So actually we built this program that we're running, we're starting to launch right now, like in the probably next month will be out, and it's called Flexiballer. So it's something that I really wanted to talk about, because I believe that can help a lot of people, like it helped in my previous journey with other players, and I believe that intertwining these two things, the yoga and the basketball, modern basketball concept, can help a lot of players. And I believe that this program can give so much to so many people, and I hope not only for the success of it, because of course everyone is cheering for himself and for his own project, but I believe that can help many people to also understand that this is a game, you know, and this is something that I learned in Denmark. At the end of the day, yeah, it's cool to be competitive, but at some point you stop and you understand this is a game, and we're blessed to do this job. We're blessed to play basketball. We're blessed to do sports, and that is helping us to be a better person, not only on the basketball court, but also outside as a better people. So that's the message I want to leave everyone with. And I hope that you can be open every day more to learn more about what you're passionate about.
Awesome. That's really well put. I'm going to be really interested in the yoga part as well, because I do like the physical fitness. So that's great that you're doing that. And Coach, I want to thank you for being able to spend some time and talk about the work that you do with players and the things that you see and maybe us as coaches, things that we can do to help out our highly skilled players and make sure that we're giving them the best experience possible. So thank you so much, and hopefully everything goes well with the launch of your new program and you're able to still keep doing all the things you do at a really high level. Thank you so much for spending some time, Coach.
Thank you so much to you and Mike for giving me this time, for giving me your time.
And thank you guys so much for listening. This was another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast, and we will see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. Make sure to connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, or reach us directly through email at basketballteacherpodcast@gmail.com. Take care, be safe, and we'll see you next time.